The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.
College Football Live is presented by Dr. Pepper.
College Football Live out of the tunnel. Saturday's Michigan State-Maryland game unfortunately canceled, this due to COVID-19 concerns with the Terrapins. Maryland also announcing that head coach Mike Locksley has tested positive. He is isolating at home. Also, the College Football Playoff Management Committee has agreed to keep the playoff in its current timeline and name a national champion as planned on January 11th, unless the pandemic forces a schedule change. This according to CFP Executive Director Bill Hancock to ESPN. Happy to have you with us this afternoon. Tom Luckenbill and Rod Gilmore will join me shortly. I'm Wendy Nix. We start this afternoon, though, with College Football senior writer Heather Dinich. With more on the notion that the College Football Playoff is hoping to go on as scheduled, Heather, everybody clearly hoping that. But the question becomes, what if one of those four teams who are selected to play has COVID issues, then what?
That's only the part of the question that got answered yesterday from the commissioners. And what they determined was that if that were to happen, they would not select a replacement team for that semifinalist. In other words, the number five team wouldn't automatically get a bump. But they don't know beyond that what would happen, because if you have a team that has to quarantine for 14 days, you're talking about 14 weeks, that moves into the NFL playoff calendar. Even just 1 week does that. And then if you fast forward, the next open Saturday in January is January 30th, Wendy. So that's why you start talking about pushing the playoff back. And as of right now, those 10 FBS commissioners and Notre Dame Athletic Director Jack Swarbrick do not have an answer for that.
Well, look, it's tough. That's when it gets messy. Heather, thank you. And again, the first rankings we will see come next Tuesday. That's the first College Football Playoff ranking, and we'll have a show at 7 o'clock Eastern. Listen, Rod, let me start with you. We've seen each week multiple top 25 teams have to stand down, either canceled or postponed because of the coronavirus. What is your expectation as we look toward the College Football Playoffs?
Well, first and foremost, if they're not going to replace a team that were maybe coming up with COVID issues, are they just then telling that team's opponent, hey, congratulations, you're playing for the national championship. You don't have to play to get there, but we're just going to let you in the game. I mean, that seems a little bit odd to me. I think the only way that you assure that whoever you select is the top four teams is you try to create a bubble with those four teams in advance, put them all in one location, get them all tested, everybody's clear prior to getting there, and you don't let them leave. You create a bubble of in any way, shape, or form that you can to protect against the greatest fear for the College Football Playoff, and that is having a team miss out on a game.
Yeah, Tom, the bubble. The bubble would solve things, but the first question is, how soon do you go into the bubble? Do you do it right after you make the selection? Do you do it while some places who are on the quarter system will still be trying to get through finals, even though they'll be online? Do you want them all in the bubble then? So, you know, we're in the middle of this pandemic, and it's getting worse, so we do have a serious risk, and I'm concerned about that. I think the one optimistic thing that is out there is that following Thanksgiving, most of these universities have told their students, stay home, don't come back. We're doing online the rest of the way, and those schools that are on the semester system are done. So you're going to have a mini bubble on campus for most of these players starting right after Thanksgiving. And so only the players who live off campus will not be in that mini bubble. So I think the chances of teams getting healthier and avoiding issues is a little bit better once you get past Thanksgiving, assuming that they have those little mini bubbles on campus.
Well, you make a fair point. Almost every university is doing that, saying Thanksgiving is it until we get past the new year. And look, the bubble works. We know that. We saw it with the NBA. But these are college student athletes. It's just a different deal. It makes it a lot more difficult. But here we are. We switch gears now. Talk about the Big Ten. First place will be on the line in the East in a battle of unbeatens. Number 3 Ohio State hosting number 9 Indiana. This is in Columbus. And here's Justin Fields on playing a top 10 game against the Hoosiers.
We look forward to every opportunity because, I mean, last week our poll game got canceled. So we know that every game isn't promised and, you know, we have to take one game at a time. So I think, you know, since we're in this situation or pandemic or whatever, you know, I think our team is taking, you know, each game one at a time, and we're cherishing each and every game because we know that it could be our last. So we're not taking any game lightly, and we're going to try and play every game like it's our last game. I think Indiana's a good team. I think a lot of people were sleeping on them at the beginning of the year, but they've clearly shown that they you know, can compete. They are a good team, and they have great coaching, so it's not really a surprise.
Rod, look, this is an important game for Ohio State, but let's face it, it is a benchmark game for Indiana. And Justin Fields and that offense get all kinds of credit, as they should. But what are your expectations for this Buckeye defense against a Hoosiers team that's been able to move the football?
Wendy, how fun is this? I mean, we have Indiana in a big game with Ohio State, and the quarterbacks should get all the attention. There's no question about that, you know, from my perspective. But this is a big challenge for the Ohio State defense, and they've given up some big plays. But the best individual matchup this weekend is Sean Wade, the outstanding defensive back, against Ty, the great wide receiver for Indiana. That is a matchup that I'm absolutely certain that Wade has been saying to his coaches all week long, hey, I got him. Put me on that guy. This is my challenge. This is my test this week. Any defensive back wants that challenge. And you know about Freifogel. I mean, he just went off last week for a couple hundred yards against Sparty. Had a big game the week before that against Michigan. So he's hot right now. There's absolutely no way that Sean Wade does not want to be involved with matching up with him as much as possible in this game. And I think it's the best individual matchup of the weekend, Tom.
I think it's a great matchup, team to team, not just individually with players. And when you look at Indiana, how did they get to this point? They are a turnover-creating machine. 6 consecutive games, they have forced at least 2 turnovers, all right? They've got 10 interceptions in a short span. It's been 15 years in the Big Ten since somebody has had that many interceptions. So in order to keep pace with Ohio State, in order to beat Ohio State, they're going to have to force some errors from Justin Fields, who, by the way, has yet to turn the ball over and only threw 3 interceptions in the entirety of last year. So something's got to give in that regard. I don't think man for man, as well coached and as great of a season as Indiana is having, is good enough athletically to just beat Ohio State. I think they're going to have to force some errors, get Justin Fields to turn the ball over, get a fumble, possibly have a return for a touchdown in the kicking game. They need something to give them the edge, and they might need some of Ohio State's help to get it.
And we've said it all week long, and not that history bears repeating necessarily, but Ohio State has won 25 straight against Indiana. They'll be looking, of course, to make it 26 on Saturday. So Ohio State back in action, so too is Clemson after a week off. Also, we will finally see Clemson quarterback Trevor Lawrence back under center Saturday after having not played in more than 3 weeks with a win. Lawrence can tie the Clemson record for career wins by a starting quarterback held by Rodney Williams, Taj Boyd, and Deshaun Watson. So Clemson's schedule not extremely difficult from here on out, Rod, but in particular, all eyes will be on the quarterback. What are your expectations for Trevor Lawrence as we look toward the remainder of the season and the playoffs?
Well, Wendy, I think Trevor Lawrence is going to be great. I think he'll be fine. I think he's ready and excited to get back in there unless he starts to press. And if he presses, he could have an issue. Now, remember, last season, we saw him press to start the season, and he was not himself, and it was a rocky start. He pressed a little bit in the championship game, and it was not a great game for him, not a great look. But he came into this season, and he was free-flowing. He was relaxed. He was throwing the ball well. He just looked like he was having fun. So right now, he's just loose, and he's not worried about having dropped in the Heisman race, that he's not being talked about in that, that he's ignoring all the talk about DJ Uiagalelei being a guy who, you know, was holding it down while he was gone. If he ignores all and just plays and has fun again, I'm not worried about him at all.
How bad did you just want to say DJ? How bad? You just wanted to say DJ.
And I'm not sure he stuck the landing. It was close.
The man's name is important, and we should be saying it right.
I hear you. All right. Hey, listen. And I'm going to look at the other side of the ball for Clemson. And just Brent Venables, the defensive coordinator, just this last week when he was asked about who they are on defense, he said, you know what? We're a pretty good defense. We're not a great defense. And I think the reason why they haven't been a great defense is twofold. They've given up a lot of explosives in the back end, which is rare for Clemson. And then the injuries have started to pile up, particularly in their defensive front seven, and they have struggled to handle athletic quarterbacks. We saw Ian Book, even Phil Dracovic had his way at times with his legs. And now you're going to see Jordan Travis for Florida State, who's a dynamic athlete. I think Clemson's got to get back to basics. I know they're not going to have Skalski back this week. We'll see how many of their other starters return, particularly in their defensive front seven. They've got to limit explosives, and they've got to be able to tackle a mobile quarterback this week.
And, Rod, you talk about Trevor Lawrence sort of ignoring all of the Heisman hype and all that. He came back to Clemson to win another national championship. We know that. That is his goal. Hopes to take another step forward over the weekend. Speaking of a step forward, coming up on College Football Live, how about an all-access pass to one of the most intense rivalries in college football? We take you inside the bedlam on Tap Saturday in Oklahoma.
College Football Live is presented by Dr. Pepper, the official drink of Fansville. And in part by Tostitos. Get to the good stuff.
A college football doubleheader Saturday on ABC and ESPN app. The battle of unbeatens in the Big Ten, Northwestern and Wisconsin at 3:30 Eastern. Then Oklahoma State taking on Oklahoma 7:30 Eastern. Brad Edwards crunches the numbers for this latest Bedlam tilt.
Bedlam has seen a little of everything in recent years. One thing it hasn't seen a lot of, Oklahoma State victories. Mike Gundy has just two wins in his 15 games as a head coach in this rivalry. And despite having the higher ranked team in the polls this week, is once again a solid underdog. That's because the weakest unit in this game appears to be the Cowboys' offense. That group returned significant star power, but has struggled to find a rhythm. And it will need to play well as the OU offense is starting to show the potency of its predecessors.
It's going to be an intense atmosphere, regardless of how the teams are doing. But you really can't toss all that out.
With the Big 12 all but out of the playoff chase, this game isn't merely about state bragging rights. These are two of the top contenders to reach the conference championship game, and both have very little margin for error. An OSU win would virtually end Oklahoma's chance to capture its sixth straight conference title. A Sooners victory would place the Cowboys in desperation mode.
When we compete in Bedlam, it's a big game. It's a huge game in the state of Oklahoma.
Sometimes a rivalry game is as much about ruining the other team's season as improving your own. In this case, the winner will get to do both.
Oklahoma and Oklahoma State have played each other 114 times, including seven ties. The Sooners lead the series with 89 wins, the second most wins by a team against a single opponent in FBS history. Former Sooners and, of course, current Browns quarterback Baker Mayfield knows this rivalry well. Here's his exchange with our Browns reporter, Jake Trotter.
College game day is going to Norman this weekend. You have any thoughts on the Bedlam game?
Jake, what are you trying to stir up right now?
Just seeing if you're going to say anything.
The little brother always needs to be put in his place, Jake. You know that.
Oh, boy, we're happy to have with us another former Sooner and two-time all-conference defensive tackle, Dusty Dvorak. And, Dusty, what do you make of what Baker had to say there?
Look, personally, I'd be a little bit careful with the little brother comment. Look, I lost to Oklahoma State my first 2 years in 2001 and 2002, and it cost us an opportunity to play for a national championship. Look, this is a true rivalry. I don't care about how many wins Oklahoma has. This state, either you're a Cowboy or you're a Sooner, a lot of these players have played against each other all throughout their high school careers. There is a lot on the line, as you guys put out there, Wendy, and this is a quality Oklahoma State football team. This Oklahoma Sooner team better not have the same mindset that Baker does, looking at Oklahoma State as just a little brother being ready to get put in their place.
Yeah, that'll get you in trouble quick. And I agree with you. I love this game because it is still a rivalry. So many, I think, we've seen watered down over the years. Not in this case. So I will ask you this. When you look at the X's and the O's, Dusty, on the field, what do you believe will be the pivotal matchups on Saturday?
Well, it's got to be this Oklahoma State defense against the Oklahoma offense. And look, the Oklahoma State Cowboys are winning football games with defense. This is the best defense of the Mike Gundy era there in Stillwater. And here's the deal. They can rush. They can cover. Fourth in all of college football, getting off the field on third down. And they're number eight in college football at sacks. Look on the edge. Excellent rusher and Trace Ford. And I think what makes this defense go is the two safeties. Trace Sterling, Colby Harville-Peel, as you see there with the interception. These guys are outstanding. They run a ton of man coverage, and they can handle tight ends. They can handle H-backs, and they can handle running backs out of the backfield. Will be key because this Oklahoma offense, it is hitting their stride. Ramondre Stevenson running the football. He's been back for 2 games, 8 yards a carry. I would expect Oklahoma to try to run the football, make things easier on Spencer Rattler. But the biggest mismatch in this game's on the other side. The Oklahoma defensive line has a huge advantage against an Oklahoma State offensive line that's really struggled this year. If the Cowboys can't block the Sooners, could be a long day. How about this, Wendy? It's Big 12 football, and we're talking about the defenses with the biggest impact, not the offense.
Listen, Dusty, if I did not know better, I'd say you were pretty dialed into this one for very good reason. I know you're also dialed into the game that you will call this week. You've got Cincinnati, which is getting all kind of publicity with good reason, and UCF, and there'll be plenty of offensive firepower in that game, or at least on paper anyway. But why are you focused on the Bearcats' defense?
Look, this is the best matchup in all of college football on Saturday, offense and defense. And it's because the Cincinnati defense last year, Marcus Freeman, defensive coordinator, head coach Luke Fickell, they said, we got to put something in new. We have to find a defense to deal with this UCF offense. So they went that summer. They put this defense in. They unveiled it last year against UCF, held them to 24 points. It's that 3-3-5 type of defense, and they've got so much versatility in the secondary. They can flat out cover. Look at the nickelback, Jarrell White, who's been fantastic this year, blitzing off the edge, good in coverage, and Ahmad Gardner, who is as good a cornerback as you'll find in all of college football, had a pick six last year as a freshman. This is good on good. The number one passing offense in the country against one of the best and premier secondaries in the country. 12 interceptions, second best, and all the FBS. I can't wait to be in the bounce house to call this one, but ultimately, this matchup right here is going to decide who wins and who loses on Saturday in Orlando.
So much on the line, Dusty, and I say it every toward the end of every week as we look toward the weekend. Let's just play football, keep them safe, and let's get on the field. We'll talk soon. Thank you. Thanks, Wendy. On College Football Live, an emotional story. Stanford head coach David Shaw talks about the remarkable bond he shares as he saves his brother's life from a rare form of cancer back in 2018.
Welcome back to College Football Live, presented by Dr. Pepper.
I don't know what else to say except thanks. We're going to football. What a day.
Stanford opened the season with a tough loss to Oregon, but that was nothing compared to the last time David Shaw and the Cardinal visited Eugene, because during that game, David had no idea whether his younger brother Eric would live or die. And now, for the first time, David and Eric share their remarkable story and the brotherly bond that is nothing short of a miracle.
The story is about survival. It's about coming together. Just thinking about it, there's a tension right now in my chest and my stomach. There was still that gravity. God, I hope this works. Because if it doesn't, I'm going to lose my brother.
Eric Shaw is David's little brother. They were best friends growing up and never grew apart. But in 2011, the same year David got his dream job at Stanford, Eric's life turned into a nightmare.
I would have itching attacks where I ended up actually tearing my skin. I would still scratch at night and wake up with bloody arms and legs and skin.
It would literally look like someone had pushed marbles under his skin. There were just tumors everywhere. I don't think we were expecting to hear how bad it was.
In 2013, Eric was diagnosed with mycosis fungoides, a rare form of lymphoma. He underwent radiation and chemotherapy to get the cancer under control.
Some of the treatments, you lose your fingernails, your toenails, you know, your eyelashes, your eyebrows. It was extremely difficult, just mentally getting up and looking at myself in the mirror. I didn't recognize myself.
By 2018, doctors gave Eric a 50% chance at living just 2 more years, unless they could find a match for a bone marrow transplant.
Whatever I have to do, whatever you have to take out of me, however you have to do it, just do it. And for them to come back and say that you're not a strong enough match, it hurt me.
They searched on the worldwide registry for donors, but they only found 2 for me. The first transplant didn't work. We needed a second try.
As the 2018 season began, David took the field every game wearing a lime green pin for lymphoma, for Eric. Stanford players wore yellow and green ribbons on their helmets in honor of those fighting cancer.
I told them about the lymphoma because if that transplant didn't work, I didn't know how many more games he was going to be able to see.
They trust each other, they believe in each other. And we played really, really hard. And I gotta say one more thing to my brother, Eric. I love you.
Within weeks, the second transplant failed.
My body was damaged. I had no working blood system. I was receiving transfusions daily. I thought I was gonna die.
What do you say to your brother that where you think you've kind of pulled at the last thread? And there are no more threads. And all I could tell him was that I loved him and that I was there for him.
I needed a miracle. And that miracle was going to come in the form of my brother.
Doctors wanted to try a third transplant, using David as the donor. The chance of success was under 40%, but he was all they had left. The Stanford head coach would need 5 straight days of side effect inducing treatments to prepare for his bone marrow donation.
I had to start on a game day to go to the hospital, and I didn't want to alert the team because this was a family thing. This was something just had to be done.
We had meetings at 9 a.m., snuck out the back door, got in the car, we drove down the street to the hospital. He did the procedure, dropped him back off, snuck in the pregame meal. And here we are playing a top 25 team at 4:30 p.m.
I started to feel it in my knees. I started to feel it in my hips. It feels like carrying a 50-pound backpack. And I just kept thinking about, this is for Eric.
5 days later, David spent 8 hours at the hospital donating his stem cells. On Thursday, November 1st, those cells were given to Eric. 2 days after the transplant, David was in Seattle, back on the sideline.
I remember it being a difficult game. I remember it being a tough environment. I felt like I was walking like a sloth.
I remember that Washington game we lost by a touchdown. how hard some of the media and fans were on him, I just remember thinking, gosh, if people only knew.
You know, I thought about, man, I hope Eric's doing okay. God, I hope this works.
On November 25th, 2018, after 52 straight days in the Stanford Hospital, Eric Shaw wasn't dying. He was leaving. The transplant worked.
They did blood tests, they did skin biopsies. The tests came back completely negative, no cancer.
I remember telling the team when my brother was diagnosed, but when I told him he was cancer-free, it was crazy, right? It was like we had just won a game in quadruple overtime. I mean, there were guys jumping on me, picking me up, and hugging me, and I kept so much of it from them, but they knew.
7 years of battling this disease, and it was over. A miracle.
Daddy!
There's people that are saved every day because somebody made the choice to become a donor. For me, it was my brother. The bond that we have now. We're truly blood brothers.
On Sunday, November 1st, the entire family celebrated the 2-year anniversary of Eric's successful transplant with a Zoom call, and he remains cancer-free. Tremendous story and certainly phenomenal for perspective, Rod. I know you're a former Cardinal. You're also a longtime family friend of the Shaw family, and I'm sure you were a part of that process and watched it play out. What's it like to watch that now?
Well, Wendy, I've known the Shaw family for a long, long time. You know, David, when he was a player at Stanford, and his dad, Willie, was a defensive coordinator there. And I learned an awful lot of football from Willie. And I can tell you, this family is remarkable. It's a very close family, and it's a very private family. And even when Eric was going through this, and I had chats with David, but I didn't know the extent to which things were real dire for him. David certainly was talking to me and helping me with my own treatments, cancer treatments, and talking for comparison purposes and the like. But he was a rock for his team during that period. And I think the one thing that's really important that people really need to know is that as private as his family is, it was important to Eric to be public about this, for people to know that when you're going through tough bouts with cancer, that you keep fighting, that you fight like hell every day, because you never know when or where the miracle is going to come from. And so he wanted his story to be told and to be out there. And I'm really glad that he did, because it's so inspiring for so many people dealing with cancer.
Never give up, Rod. Thank you. Just a tremendous story. We appreciate you. We appreciate the Shaw family and couldn't be happier. It's nice to have some good news in this difficult time. Certainly 2020 hasn't had a ton of it. We continue with what amounts to a Big Ten elimination game. We have Wisconsin at Northwestern, one of the more intriguing quarterback matchups of the weekend, and we'll talk about who has the edge straight ahead.
You're watching College Football Live, presented by Dr. Pepper.
Here's a look at ESPN's All-State Playoff Predictor, currently projecting Alabama with a 40% chance to take home the trophy, Ohio State at 20%, and you would think Notre Dame and Clemson would be next, but the metrics actually say the next best title odds lie not with the Irish or the Tigers, but with the Badgers. ESPN's Bill Connolly breaks it down.
According to ESPN's All-State Playoff Predictor, Wisconsin currently has a 55% chance of making the college football playoff, the third best odds overall.
Wisconsin in total control.
Computers love the Badgers, They are currently third in both ESPN's FPI ratings and the SP Plus ratings, two opponent and tempo-adjusted measures of efficiency.
The Badgers showing zero signs of rust.
Graham Mertz's emergence at quarterback has offered Wisconsin's offense a new dimension as it copes with life after 2,000-yard rusher Jonathan Taylor.
He drops that right in the breadbasket. What a start for Graham Mertz!
But the defense is the story. Success rate is an efficiency measure that tracks how frequently you're gaining 50% of necessary yardage on first down, 70% on second, and 100% on third and fourth. Wisconsin ranked ninth in success rate allowed last year, and two games into 2020, the Badgers are a distant first. In fact, they're first against both the run and the pass.
He's dragged down to the ground, and the defense, they're not giving up yet.
Northwestern's defense is superb in its own right and could make life difficult for Mertz and the Wisconsin offense on Saturday. But the Wildcats will still have to figure out how to move the football on Jack Sanborn and the impenetrable Badgers. That's easier said than done.
Really a clear explanation. They still have to play the games. And let's focus on the quarterbacks in this one. Tom, what have you seen and what do you expect from Wisconsin quarterback Graham Mertz?
Oh, I've seen incredible poise, accuracy. I've seen him make what I would term to be difficult throws to intermediate and deep levels. I think he's the difference. You know, he's thrown for 7 touchdowns in 2 games. It's been 15 years since a Wisconsin quarterback has accomplished that. They are not pedestrian under center. And I think there's a pretty significant drop-off in the backfield in terms of what they lost in Jonathan Taylor and who they're playing with now. So that's the difference. It's Graham Mertz. He compensates for that. And now all of a sudden you've got some explosiveness because your quarterback's not only a dynamic passer, but he's a good athlete. He's the difference for me. I think that they've got a bright future on offense in Wisconsin. It's because of him.
You know, Tom, at Northwestern, quarterback Peyton Ramsey has been overlooked his entire career. I mean, he was at Indiana and played well, but Michael Penix was the guy. When Penix was hurt last year, he stepped in and did a great job. He's at Northwestern, and everybody is talking about Graham Mertz in this game. No one's talking about Peyton Ramsey. His name is Peyton. Come on now. The name like Peyton, he's got a chance to be really, really good. Look, I had him in a game last year against Purdue, and he was lights out. He stepped up and performed big time, 337 yards, 3 touchdowns. He's normally an efficient quarterback, but he has the capability of giving you a big game. And they'll need a big game from him against this Wisconsin defense. He takes care of the ball. He's smart. So let's start to get used to this other guy named Peyton who just might show up and surprise some people on Saturday.
Listen, they're not alone, but Wisconsin had to deal with some COVID-related issues, and it was tough because there was such momentum, especially where the quarterback was concerned. But again, we hope stay safe, stay on the field, and we'll see on Saturday. Another game. Let's talk about the USC Trojans, shall we, as we head out west. We'll join Rod Gilmore out there. They rallied back from a 13-point deficit against the Sun Devils with a 1:20 left to play, a go-ahead touchdown on the 21-yard pass. And next, against Arizona, they finished with another game-winning drive, just 25 seconds on the clock, and that sealed the deal. Rod, I know you're calling this game. It's USC-Utah. What are your concerns about the Trojan quarterback?
Well, all of L.A. seems to be concerned about Keaton Slovis and whether he's healthy and what's wrong with him and all that kind of good stuff. That's been going around for a few days now. And you know what? I get it, because if you watch the last couple games, there have been some uncharacteristic throws by Keaton Slovis that make you go, wait a minute here. Here's the first one. Here's the touchdown pass he normally would make, but he throws behind Drake London. Look at what's open there. That's normally where he puts that ball, and that's an easy touchdown, but he throws it behind him. And you just go, that's not the Keaton Slovis we know. Watch this slant. This is the deep ball he throws, and it wobbled, and it was the punt. And everybody said, well, there must be something really wrong with him. He couldn't make that throw. Here's the slant I was just talking about, high and behind his receiver. And we're just not used to seeing that from Keaton Slovis. He was perhaps the most accurate quarterback coming back into college football for this season. Now, he's healthy. He's told people he doesn't have a bad arm or anything, says that his mechanics are a little bit off. I also know for a fact that, you know, the footballs that he's been using at times, he's had a little trouble with, a little sticky, and he hasn't been real comfortable with them. They'll get that worked out. So all these issues about Keaton Slovis, when you think about it, you say, wait a minute, did you see the last 2 minutes of each of the last 2 games? He was lights out in those two games to win those games, game-winning drives. So I don't think there's anything physically wrong with him. I think that when you get pressure, you get sped up, Tom, and your mechanics are off a little bit. But he settles down, and when they had to have him perform his best, he did.
Listen, the good news is there's no drama in L.A. Nobody there is prone to overreact, so it will be fine. Everybody will stay the course. Speaking of staying the course, and I think this is interesting, we'll talk about some breaking news out of the Pac-12 because we've said this many times. It's 2020. Everything has to be flexible. We have to be audible and ready to just roll with things. And the Pac-12 now, Rod, says they will loosen the restrictions on playing out-of-conference games. And this, of course, in response to the fact that so many of these in-conference games are having to be canceled or postponed and they need to play. So what's your reaction to the news that if you meet certain criteria, it's not just everybody, you'll be able to play an out-of-conference game in the Pac-12?
Yeah, Wendy, John Wilner of the San Jose Mercury News first reported this a couple of days ago that this was likely to come because the athletic directors were pushing for it. So they got the approval from the presidents. And the upshot is that they were having so many games canceled that you would have a team or two that could not get rescheduled with another conference opponent. So they wanted to get some flexibility and allow that to happen. So if they meet the three criteria, and those three criteria are, one, you've got to meet the Pac-12 testing standards to play a non-conference team. Two, you have to play at the Pac-12 site. And then three, the game has to be broadcast with one of the Pac-12 TV partners. So if you meet those, you can do it. Now, I personally look at that and I go, wow, if this continues, there's an opportunity for a team like BYU, perhaps, to get scheduled against a Pac-12 team down the line, and that would help them in their chase to get into the New Year's Six.
Rod, I was just thinking, right now BYU is scrambling through their protocols, trying to make sure, hey, wait a minute, do we meet those three? Do we meet those three? Because I guarantee you they're calling every single Pac-12 team. The question is, which one of them is man enough to say yes? Because I don't think I'd want to play BYU right now. That team right now would be in the top 2 to 3 teams in the Pac-12. No question about it.
Yeah, this may be one of those careful what you wish for kind of things. BYU on line one. Again, yeah. You got to keep it in the Pac-12, so to speak, but there will be an opportunity to play out-of-conference games if it can work out. Listen, I say Joe Burrow and college football fans, that'll get your attention, and understandably so. But you may be surprised coming up on College Football Live. Kyle Trask keeping pace with Joe Burrow's numbers last year. That was Heisman-winning production. We'll talk about it. And our resident QB reveals a key to the Gators' past game success.
They've been doing this thing since 1904.
OU, OSU, this is Bedlam!
A huge game in the state of Oklahoma.
A lot of state pride on the line.
That's the big game of the year.
It's going to be an intense game like it should be.
It is, in fact, a real rivalry, and if Oklahoma State wins, its chances to reach the Big 12 title game will jump to 86%, while the Sooners' chances will drop to just 2. If Oklahoma wins, it will own the tiebreaker against the Cowboys and have a 72% chance to play for the conference title. Here's the coaches on Bedlam.
You know, this game has always been, it's always been competitive, and it's always been important, throughout. Every single one of them that I've been involved in has had, maybe been the most influential game in the Big 12 those seasons.
You know, all the other history and things that people talk about is really irrelevant in this game, in my opinion. It's a game that's coming up between two teams that have never played each other.
I feel fortunate that, we've been able to come out in the upper hand, but that's not going to mean anything at 6:30 Saturday.
Listen, that's my favorite quote of all time. It's just another game. Look, I would say the same thing, but we know that is not actually the case, not in this situation anyway. Rod, it's a bigger game in a lot of ways in the playoff picture for the one-loss Cowboys, but talk to me about the matchup you'll be watching in this one.
Yeah, I guess Oklahoma State believes now that you can win a championship with defense because that's the route that they're going, even though everybody else has turned to offense. Look, I was skeptical about this defense until I went back and started watching the tape of them against Iowa State, and they were lights out against them. I mean, we're talking about 5 3-and-outs. They held them to 21 points They only gave up four big plays. And I just thought this team is really, really good. You heard Dusty say earlier that they play a lot of man coverage, and that's true. The problem with that is it makes it tough to get picks. They only have six interceptions on the season. You need to play more zone defense in order to have eyes on the quarterback to take the ball away. They haven't done enough of that. I think you'll see a little bit more zone against Oklahoma. This defense has been sturdy, but they need takeaways. They need takeaways to beat this Oklahoma team because you got to get more possessions and you got to give your offense a short field. And if they get that, they got a real shot to beat Oklahoma here, Tom.
You know, Rod, I think what's even more staggering is how good Oklahoma's been on defense. I mean, their improvement, particularly within their defensive front seven, yep, has been glaring. I had them 2 weeks ago. I think as a team, they're the best team in the Big 12 right now. Even with two losses, they're playing really good football, but it's because of the defense. And it's not just Ronnie Perkins. It's not just Nick Bedito off the edge. Going out and getting the junior college defensive tackle and Perrion Winfrey, he has been a stalwart in the middle. And then this number 95, Isaiah Thomas, who plays end and tackle and lines up all over the front, he has created all kinds of problems for opposing offenses. So Alex Grinch finally has the body types, the effort, and now the efficiency and production of what I consider to be a defense in the making that could be a top level one. That's the thing that has prevented them from winning a college football playoff game. It's not the offense, it's the defensive side of the ball. I think people will be impressed when they see him against Oklahoma State.
All right, gentlemen, I use that term loosely. Time now for our Wendy's Wake Up, brought to you by Wendy's Breakfast. Kyle Trask putting up numbers that look similar to another SEC quarterback, the number one pick in the 2020 draft, his name, Joe Burrow. Trask has also set the record for most pass touchdowns through six games in SEC history this season. Tom, talk to me about some of the bigger reasons Trask is having so much success in that passing game.
Well, Wendy, Dan Mullen does such a good job of creating mismatches. He formations you, he motions and shifts. And then when you take a look at the formations and how he implements the running backs into the passing game, look at the formations here. He's going to try to put the formation into the boundary, all right, excuse me, to the field, and then he's going to work the running backs into the passing game, but they're into the short side of the field. See this in the red area. You got the formation to the left. Well, there's only two defenders there to defend two. Great numbers, easy high-low read, no underneath coverage for Kyle Trask to decipher. Keon Zipperer does a great job hauling in the touchdown pass. You take a look at this next one. Again, formation down here to the bottom of the field. All right, there's where all the red jerseys are. You release the back and the tight ends on the in cut. Now the back is one-on-one with a defensive end. That's a complete and utter mismatch, and it's an easy read for Kyle Trask. Now they're going to use the running back to lure defenders away. See two defenders for Texas A&M going with the back. Tight end releases to the post, and the crossing routes underneath. Now Kyle Trask uses the running back to get the defenders to create a void. Ball's thrown on point. You convert the first down, and now you're in scoring position with this Florida offense. He just takes a lot of the complexity out of the equation for the quarterback by utilizing the backs and the tight ends to the boundary of the field, and I think it's been exceptional. It's been a recipe for success in that passing game.
You know, Luke, people forget how good a quarterback coach Dan Mullen is. I mean, yeah, they forget about the work he did with Dak Prescott, going all the way back to Alex Smith. I mean, he knows how to train quarterbacks. You know, when you talk about the Heisman, the whole thing with Trask, I'm blown away that people have not recognized that he's a real candidate.
Yeah.
You know, they saw the first game. I saw his opening game, and I went, okay, nice game and whatnot. We'll see what he does. Now, I'm a voter like 900 other people for the Heisman, right? And so he got my attention now because he's been consistently playing at a high level, and his numbers are fantastic. And you know what's more important than all of that? Florida is winning.
Yes.
And if they keep winning and he keeps performing like this, he's got a real shot. You saw the numbers on him. And if he's playing in that SEC championship game with those numbers, he's going to find his way to New York.
Well, and Rod,
maybe virtually, but he'll find his way.
No Kyle Pitts either. Didn't have Kyle Pitts versus Arkansas. May
That's
not
right.
have him again this way. I mean, that there's a lot of dudes on that team now for him to throw the football to.
Yeah.
Well, this is exactly why we play a season, right? You know, odds were it was Trevor Lawrence all the way before we started, and you never know, it might be. But these are players who have a legitimate chance, and to your point, Rod, to virtually go to New York City. Speaking of Rod, listen, it's not usually a good sign if he tags you in his upset alert. In fact, it's often ominous for the favorite. So who shall it be this week? We'll talk upsets when we come back.
College Football Live is presented by Dr. Pepper, the official drink of Fansville.
Kurt, do you have a favorite football team growing up?
I started to watch this guy, Tom Brady.
All right, that'll do it. Cut it short. Well, Rod, I mean, you think I forget something? I'm ready to go.
Yes, you did forget something.
I did not get my popcorn ready.
It's target practice.
Yes!
Here we go.
Beast Mode is alive and well.
Hi, Peyton.
Mr. President.
Let's take a look at our Dr. Pepper Championship Drive Game of the Week preview. Number 7, Cincinnati at Central Florida. This is Saturday at 3:30 Eastern on ESPN. A matchup of strength on strength. The Bearcats defense and the UCF offense ranked number 1 in key statistical categories in their conference. However, Rod Gilmore, known every now and again to pick the upset. I'm not going to say you're picking that one. I have no idea. But who should we put on upset alert, Rod?
Wendy, I'm putting Cincy on upset alert. This is a bad spot.
Well, you are going that game.
Facing a dangerous team. You got a team with a quarterback that's hot. You know, they score 44 points a game. Dylan Gabriel, about 400 yards a game passing. Two receivers that are outstanding with Marlon Williams and Jalen Robinson. They've already combined for over 100 catches on this season. So this is a dangerous team that can score, and they will challenge Cincy. Cincy has to be, you know, loaded and ready to go, because the one thing that's hurt UCF, Tom, all season and last season, penalties, about 10 a game. It has ruined them in their two losses. If they clean that up and their offense is firing, they could pull it off. But it's the penalties that have been holding them back.
You know, Rod, I think for Cincinnati, the whole key is Desmond Ridder, but not through the air. It's on the ground. You know, he made some mistakes with the football. Mm-hmm. First 3 weeks, he threw 4 interceptions. He's only thrown 2 in the last 4 weeks. And then what he's done with his legs, 9 touchdowns on the ground since that impressive win on the road versus SMU, and he hasn't let up. He's had games where he's averaging 9 yards a carry, 8.5 yards a carry. Against SMU, he averaged almost 23 yards a carry. And remember, you're pulling away the sack yardage. You're taking that off of that total. So I think if Desmond Ridder continues his trend on the ground, Cincinnati wins.
Alert,
all right, guys,
Cincy.
Listen,
be on
if
alert.
You missed it, a couple. Alert, Cincinnati. The Pac-12 going to loosen the restrictions on out-of-conference game. And the College Football Playoff says they won't just bump up a team if you can't play. We'll see, and we'll see you tomorrow.